Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I am so happy to be with you 10 minutes after 3 on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. I hope you like those. A little bit of a cooler temperature because the heat is coming back. Jordana here. Thanks for spending some time with me today. We got a packed show. We have a lot happening today. We're going to talk, of course, about a mental health day. We'll talk a little bit of Trump. We'll talk a lot of Senate health care bill. What's in it? What does it mean to you? We'll get your positively viral smile going on. I'm going to lead the show with a public service announcement. We're going to talk about men and women and the things men should say to women, and most importantly, what they should not say to women. So I've been following the healthcare stuff, but I've also been following our president's trip to France. Bonjour, bonjour. Mostly just to see what Melania wears because she dresses so beautifully. She is an absolutely gorgeously stunning woman. I love to look at her. And her clothes, you know, rival her beauty because her clothes are stunning. I love fashion and she looks gorgeous in everything, everywhere she goes. So I was watching this little tidbit about her meeting the First Lady of France, Mrs. Macron, Madame Macron, as they call her. And the president, I guess this is the first time he has laid eyes on Madame Macron. And for anybody who knows the story of Brigitte Macron and her husband, she is 25 years his senior. She is 64 now. She was originally his theater teacher, by the way. I believe he was in junior high school, or it was about 15, maybe high school. She was his theater teacher. Both say nothing happened, nothing happened. She was married with 3 children at the time to somebody else. But they had an affinity for each other. And they stayed friends. She became a confidant of his. And eventually they got married. They got married. Okay. He doesn't have any kids with her, but they're married now. And she is the First Lady of France. And she has been a confidant and a supporter and a friend and now a wife and his First Lady. Okay. And they have a successful relationship. So our president looks at this lovely woman who, as I mentioned, is 64 now. And he says this: "You know, you're in such good shape." I would have played the audio for you, but it was very muffled and you couldn't understand what he was saying. And I don't do a Trump accent, but he says to her, "You know, you're in such good shape." He looks at her husband, the president of France, who he has just done a press conference with, where he defended his son and talked about maybe he will or maybe he won't change up the Paris Climate Accord. Maybe, maybe, maybe. They had talked business, and now he's talking to his wife. "You're in such good shape," looks at her husband. "Isn't she in good shape?" I mean, what's the guy supposed to say? What is the president of France supposed to say? "Yeah, she's rocking that hot body." What is he supposed to say? So, of course, the president of France just looks at him. Then he turns back to the First Lady of France and says, "Beautiful, beautiful." Now, Melania, probably the most stunning woman ever to grace the planet, is standing right next to her. Maybe Melania's used to this because she sees her husband look at other women all the time. I don't know. But what an awkward moment. He meets the First Lady of France and says, "You know, you're in such good shape. Isn't she in good shape?" to her husband. Beautiful, just beautiful. This is his commentary to the First Lady of France. So here's my public service announcement. Men, don't do that. Even if you think you're giving us a compliment, zip. I enjoy a compliment. I'm a woman. I like to wear nice clothes. I put on makeup and I brush my hair in the morning. I like to look nice. Okay? Many women do. When I meet my husband's colleagues, I don't like them to comment on my physical fitness ability. I don't like them to comment, really, on my appearance. If I'm meeting a business colleague of my husband's that I have met for the first time, I don't want him to say anything about my physical appearance. I don't. I want him to look me in the eye, shake my hand, and say, "Nice to meet you." And I will do the same for him. because I wouldn't look at him and say, you know, your ass looks great in those pants. That would be inappropriate if I was meeting a business colleague of my husband. Not to say if he happened to be the president of the United States, that would be even more inappropriate. So men and women. Okay, so women, don't say that about your husband's colleague or your husband's colleague's wife or whatever. Just don't say that. Don't comment on their physical fitness because it leads to a firestorm of what the heck did he mean by that? Did he mean that she's a 64-year-old woman and he's shocked at how smoking hot she is? Because she's pretty fantastic, I'll tell you that. She looks awesome. But if I was meeting her for the first time in a formal state setting, I would not have commented on how she was fitting into her dress. I would not. Okay? I would not. I would like my husband to compliment me, but not my husband's work colleagues that I'm meeting for the first time. My husband's old friends that I've known for years, let's say I've lost 25 pounds and they want to say to me, you know, Jory, you look great. I would say, thank you so much. This is a personal relationship I have with these people. This is not somebody I am meeting for the first time with 30,000 cameras around me and being recorded. If the audio were better, if the Trump audio were better, I would be playing for you right now. This is what he said to her, meeting her for the first time in a setting with cameras everywhere, her husband and his wife next to him. You know, you're in such good shape. Isn't she in good shape? Really? President Macron, how are you supposed to answer that without getting yourself in some kind of trouble? Thank goodness he knew to keep his mouth shut. Beautiful. Just beautiful. He looks at her. And Melania is standing right there. You know what, guys? I don't want my husband complimenting another man's wife in front of me like that. Hey, honey, doesn't she look awesome? Look at her. Fantastic. No, thank you. No, if you're old friends, it's something totally different. I say this as a public service. It's wonderful to give a nice compliment. In this context, the compliment would have been, it is lovely to meet you. That is all you needed to say. Later on at dinner, if you're talking about fashion, you can say, it's a lovely dress that you're wearing. If the conversation is about fashion, when you meet another head of state's wife, do not comment on her body. Okay, I'm sorry I'm riled up. I'm doing this as a public service so you don't embarrass your wife, so you don't embarrass your colleagues, so you don't embarrass yourself. This is what I'm telling you. I'm not saying don't give compliments. Give compliments, but let them be with respect and in the right frame of mind. Let's see. Safest. This is where your texts say. Don't say anything to women. You know what you say? Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. Hey, Jor, if you put on makeup and wear your hair nice and wear nice clothing, what are you doing all that for if you don't want people to compliment you? I'm doing it for me. Oh, my God. I wear my clothes for me. I wear makeup for me, not for you. Oh, my gosh. Let's say, hey, Jor, men don't do that. Now imagine reversing the roles and a man saying women don't do that. Media, you included. You would have a heyday. What do you mean men don't do that? I don't know. Oh, like if I was a man and I would say to a woman, women don't do that, that's fine. You know what? If Melania had said to President Macron, wow, you look smoking hot in that suit, or wow, have you been going to the gym? It would have been equally inappropriate for her to make a comment like that. That's what I'm saying. Do the role reversal. Do it in your head. Have Mrs. Macron say to Mr. Trump, you know, well, your hair looks terrific today. It would be completely inappropriate, totally inappropriate for her to make a comment on his appearance. Public service announcement. That's what I'm saying. I'm trying to help you. I am trying. Help me help you. I'm trying to help you. Hey, Jor, why should guys expect why should we expect respectful and a gentleman's deportment from a proven misogynist? Oh, okay. Again, you know, you can have your opinions about Trump. That's right. Inappropriate. Had I been there, I would have said to him, don't say that. Be quiet. Be quiet. Oh, my goodness. Sure, preach it, girl. It's classless and tactless. Oh, shoot, I have to take a break because I promise I want to talk about healthcare. You should wear a straitjacket. Maybe I should. Public service, friends. It's a public service. Take a break. Healthcare when we return. Healthcare, healthcare, healthcare. Jordana Green here. So much to discuss. Senate Republicans have a revised proposal to the Affordable Care Act. It makes significant cuts to Medicaid funding and retains some of the ACA's taxes. Joining us now is Bill Rakoff. He is a CBS News correspondent with the very latest on this new Senate bill. Bill, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me again. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm glad you're here. Can you highlight the biggest changes to this revision?
Well, a couple of the big changes that are here, and I say big changes because there really aren't a whole lot of them. It makes a change to the original bill's Medicaid cuts. That was a huge issue for moderate Republicans, but it's, again, not a massive change to it, but hopefully a little bit less in the way of cuts that would, try to appease them a little bit. It also gives some conservatives some good news in that a version of Senator Ted Cruz's proposal that would let healthy people buy cheaper plans, would be included in the amendment. But it does also leave some of Obamacare's taxes in place, which the original Senate draft bill did not. So those are the three big changes. And you may be sitting there listening to this saying, well, who are they going to win over with that? And I guess that's the big question at this point.
Let's talk about what it does or doesn't do to Medicaid. That is one of the greatest concerns for those on Medicaid or those that were added with the Affordable Care Act.
Well, in fact, the bill does allow for Medicaid expansions to linger a while. There, the original plan had called for cuts. Now, there's still going to be cut coming up in the year 2025. A lot of the Obamacare Medicaid expansion will go away, but at least this preserves it until that time. Whether it's enough to appease the moderates like Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, we don't know. Collins has already said that she doesn't like the bill right now, at least the way it's drafted, and she won't even vote for it to go to the floor for debate coming up next week.
I had one of our congresspeople on here in Minnesota yesterday, and he says this bill doesn't cut Medicare. Is that because it doesn't maybe cut the funding? It just reduces it in later years?
Medicare or Medicaid?
I'm sorry, Medicaid. Correct, yeah. Medicaid.
It doesn't cut the existing Medicaid expansion under Obama right away. It will eventually be cut at the end of 2025, okay. And that's what we're seeing here. The initial draft did provide some pretty deep cuts to it, so whether or not it's enough to win over the moderates, again, not sure. I was talking with our congressional correspondent, my colleague Nancy Cordes, a few minutes ago, and she was telling me it's really hard to see winning over any newcomers to this just because of the tweaks to Medicaid.
Any changes on the pre-existing conditions? Will you be able to be covered and not cut off from health care?
Republicans say that Mitch McConnell says that it does preserve pre-existing conditions in this new draft bill. But again, they wonder what's going to happen farther down the line. Mm-hmm. Democrats say it's still going to cut it eventually, or it doesn't provide the amount of pre-existing coverage that Obamacare does. So, but you can expect that from Democrats who have lockstep long said that this is a mean bill. And by the way, they say the new draft bill is even meaner than the original Senate version.
Really? Well, what do they mean by meaner? Because it preserves tax cuts for the wealthy?
Well, it preserves the tax cuts for... that would be good news, for conservatives. But mm-hmm. Yes, they do say it preserves... does allow for some of the Obamacare taxes to stay in. Mm-hmm. That's another big change to this. The original version wiped out those Obamacare taxes, but they are restored in this. And so you've got a guy like Senator Ted Cruz who doesn't want to see that, but at the same time, he's got an amendment that says that he would like to see reduced coverage offered to healthy Americans. And right now, he says if this is the bill that goes forward, the one they released today, he would be inclined to vote for it.
So talk to me about that, Ted Cruz, the bare bones coverage. Is that going to be available for even people who get coverage through their employer? Are you going to be able to opt in no matter how much money you make?
The devil's in the details. We just don't know how that's going to play out yet. But in general terms, basically what it means is healthier people who have a clean bill of health would be able to go to their insurer and say, I don't need A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. All I need is A, B, and C right now. And so I'm going to buy that for a cut rate. And that way, proponents like Senator Cruz say this helps Americans, especially younger Americans, yes, who may be healthy and can't afford full-bore health insurance. It allows them to take a smaller plan while they're trying to pay down, say, student loan or just trying to make a living.
Is it going to be a la carte style? I know that maybe that's a couple steps ahead already.
Again, devil see what insurance companies decide to come up with if this plan passes. Now, here's an important point about that Cruz amendment, and Nancy Cordes pointed this out to me a little bit earlier this afternoon, is that they're trying to pass this through the reconciliation process, which is mainly a budget process. And because to do that, then they only need a simple majority rather than the 60 votes, which there's absolutely no way they could get it to pass the bill. The question around the Cruz amendment is whether or not it is allowable under the reconciliation process, because it's not much, so much of a budget item as it is a policy amendment. And so we'll find out whether or not that provision is even allowable next week.
What about people who are very sick and need a lot of coverage? Will the insurance companies be allowed to charge them more?
Well, to listen to Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer, the simple answer is yes. They say elderly Americans could be charged as much as five times more than younger Americans, more healthy Americans under this coverage. And they say that alone makes it a horrible bill on top of it. And so, people may be in a position where, their existing conditions may wind up costing them a little bit more as they go on down the line or as they develop new conditions as they get older.
If you were getting a subsidy under the Affordable Care Act, will you still receive that subsidy?
That remains to be seen. Ted Cruz, of course, Rand Paul, vocal opponents of subsidies. If they were allowable under this bill, and I confess to you, I don't know the answer to that, you can bet that anything that would pass would get rid of those subsidies within a period of time, probably over that 10 years that we've been talking about for Obamacare Medicaid expansion.
Then what about help paying the deductibles or the copays? Same deal?
Pretty much with subsidies, yeah. So, I confess I haven't read that deep into the bill to know where this one particularly stands on it.
And I understand that, it just came out today. Trust me, it was very long. That's why you're here, because I didn't have time to read the whole thing. But, Bill, just one more question. What about kids staying on their parents' plan till 26?
The idea is that was always a fairly agreeable stand. I did not see anywhere that says that's been cut from this newest version of the bill. It was included in the original Senate draft, and so we'll wait to see. But I don't see anything here that changes that.
When do you think we'll get a CBO score?
So the CBO score is expected to come on Monday at some point. Don't expect it to be a whole lot different than the one that we saw last time around, that projects somewhere around 52 million Americans off insurance by 2026. Because, again, there aren't that many fundamental changes in the bill, just some tweaks here and there. Once the CBO score is in, then Mitch McConnell would like to have a procedural vote to allow debate and amendments coming up on Tuesday. But we still don't know whether he's got the votes. They're still doing the whip count.
Okay, Bill Rakoff, CBS News correspondent, thank you so much for your expertise.
Thanks for the time.
And by the way, the bill would also continue to block Planned Parenthood from receiving Medicaid funding for a year. It is 3:32. Adam Carter with the news next.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Do you get annoyed when the internet's slow? When you can't get on your favorite site? Maybe there's too many people are on the site, or your computer's a little slow. Something's going on with your Wi-Fi and you're yelling at the screen. I know you do. I know you do. We all do it, right? I was just doing it before with Susan, and she goes, I know, the internet's so slow here today. It happens. We're so spoiled and we're so impatient. We have the world at our fingertips and we do not want it to slow down. Internet companies, big and small, banded together on Wednesday for an online protest to preserve net neutrality. Net neutrality is a big buzzword, but it's something you should know about if you're one of those people who gets annoyed when the Amazon is taking a little too long to load. Dr. Everett Ehrlich is a business economist and former Undersecretary of Commerce for Economic Affairs in the Clinton administration, and he's joining me to talk about this day of action and net neutrality. Dr. Ehrlich, welcome to the program.
How are you doing, Jordana? Ev would be fine, if you don't mind.
Oh, Ev, great. I love that. We're old friends now. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
Thank you, ma'am.
No problem. Okay. You can call me Jor. That's what the listeners call
I
me.
Shall.
Okay. Just define net neutrality for anyone
net
who's new to this.
Net neutrality is simply this. Everything on the internet has to travel at the same speed on the same terms and conditions. And that's good and bad. I mean, you know, if everyone on the highway was told they had to drive at the same speed, there'd be an uproar. But on the internet, it's a little different.
Okay, and this is in place because the big companies, the motherlodes, you know, the Amazons of the world, can afford to pay a boatload of money to the internet providers to get kind of an edge, to get faster.
Well, you see, that it's kind of like that, but Amazon and Google and those guys are paying to promote net neutrality, because if you say that your mail to your aunt and Amazon stuff goes out on the same terms and conditions, then Amazon doesn't have to pay for the congestion they cause. You know, in the evening, about half of all the internet traffic in America is Netflix and YouTube. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that imposes costs on other people. But in a way, that debate's already happened. Everyone agrees. Even, you know, the ATTs and Comcast of the world are prepared to say, look, that's fine. We'll have net neutrality. That's okay. The important thing right now is to get legislation that makes it happen. Because under the Obama administration, the FCC decided that in order to get net neutrality, they would regulate the internet the way they used to regulate the phones. And a lot of people wondered what they were smoking. You know, the phone system was all one thing. The internet is satellites and cable and DSL and fiber and wireless. I mean, how's the government going to regulate all of that? And as soon as Trump came in, he looked up and he said, oh, so much for that. That's gone. So what we need now is a law that says there's going to be net neutrality, we're done with this case, and let's move on. And I think that would be the best thing for everyone.
So is anyone against it? Who was involved in yesterday's online protest?
Well, you know, what were they protesting against?
Right.
Right. You know, that was the point. I think everyone's accepted that the world wants net neutrality and they want to move on. In fact, if we're going to have a day of action, then perhaps we could do well to think about what's after net neutrality. Mm-hmm. How do we extend the net to places that are poor or rural or that are worried that the net is like a front for black helicopters? How do we protect our privacy? How do we maintain competition that keeps innovation going? How do we address the most troubling monopolies like Google, right, which is tracking what you do wherever you go, right? I think beyond net neutrality, there are a lot of important questions about the future of the internet, and today isn't a bad day to raise those as well as to argue for net neutrality.
Well, that's the conversation we had yesterday about the New York Times and all of the newspapers now going to Congress to bargain with Google and with Facebook about having equal space, of them not stealing their content. You know, how does New York Times and everybody make money and stay competitive when you have the Facebooks and the Googles of the world giving away free content?
And that goes to a lot of important questions about our democracy, that newspapers are being scraped off of their sheets by Google, by Facebook, without any payment. And of course, then the same Google and Facebook folks are reprinting stuff that comes out of the KGB, right?
Correct, without being vetted.
Mm-hmm. That is, mm-hmm. I mean, that's, it goes beyond that. Look, let's say you and a friend decide to spend the evening together. Google knows that because your phones are in the same place without being moved all night.
That's right.
That's horrifying. And I think that those questions and questions about how do we close the digital divide, how do we make sure that poor and rural communities get fast internet, are the next questions, and that in some sense are even more important the net neutrality for the future of our economy and our democracy.
I have a feeling, Ev, you've thought deeply about that. And getting internet into everybody's hands, it seems no longer like a luxury but a right, because that's how children are learning these days. And the kids in the rural communities won't have the same advantages if they don't have internet. So what is the plan to even the scale there?
You know, there is a plan. There was a broadband national plan under President Obama, and of course it's disappeared into vapor.
Why?
But, you know, look, you're right. I feel strongly about this. When I worked for President Clinton back in the 90s at the Commerce Department, we put together the law in 1996 that allowed the internet to explode. And now we're seeing that in some ways under attack from both sides. The right wing that says if people don't have internet, screw them. Too bad for them. That sucks. Too bad. And on the other hand, you have folks who think that we ought to take money away from Medicare and Medicaid and the EPA and have a public internet that would cost hundreds of billions of dollars. And I'm not sure is much better than what we've got now, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So we've really got to have a very nuanced discussion in our country about what we expect from the internet, how to extend its benefits to everyone, and how to ensure our privacy and our freedom from monopolies as the internet develops.
See, that is interesting, because if it becomes governmental and then everybody has a right to internet, then what are the rights of the government to look at the internet that we're using and how we're using it?
That is an added facet. But, you know, look, there hasn't been a government in the free world that decided to build its own internet and didn't regret it. The government of Australia was voted out of office behind that. The mayor of Burlington, Vermont was elected because he promised to clean up the mess of municipal internet. I'm in a time when we're struggling to find money to provide for health care or to regulate the environment. The idea that we're going to distract ourselves with let's build something that's already there, that's a little beyond the pale. Speaking as a progressive, right, where are our priorities?
Mm. So whose responsibility then should it be? Private companies to bring the internet to every, I mean, we're only talking about our nation, of course, but it could certainly help, you know, regions of the Midwest where their education is restricted because their governments don't allow. I mean, places like China or North Korea. But just speaking about our country, whose responsibility should it be to give?
It's a shared responsibility. Look, right now, you've got cable and telephone companies and wireless companies and satellite companies that are competing to bring the internet to you. That's fine as far as it goes. We then need to have a plan, as I think as a country, that says, how are we going to make sure that the internet goes to every school, to every healthcare service provider, to every local government, right? That needs to be put on top of the base of competition that we have now. Competition is real good at getting you a phone that does tricks that you couldn't imagine 10 years ago. But it alone won't get to poor kids and rural communities and to get your medical information into a national system or to let kids in local schools be exposed to the amazing stuff that's out there on the internet.
Dr. Everett Ehrlich is a business economist and former Undersecretary of Commerce for Economic Affairs in the Clinton administration. And what an education today, Ev. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jora. We'll talk again soon.
You got it. Thank you, sir. I sound like a complete socialist when I say this, which is clearly not who I am when you guys know about that. But maybe I feel this way about internet, because when I see the advances of telemedicine, you know, the lives that can be saved, the things that can be diagnosed, the information that can be shared for people in rural communities that don't have access to Mayo Clinic or, you know, even HCMC or a university hospital. When I see the information that they don't have that can help those communities, it's sad. You know, they should have it. It puts them on an even playing field just for life, even education. You know, young kids, it's so easy now to get them high-level education with the internet, to expose them to so many more, you know, books and reading materials and lectures from teachers, one-on-one help that they might not have access to in their rural communities. It seems unfair. I know life isn't fair, but it seems unfair to me that people wouldn't have access to this. So those are my thoughts on internet everywhere. Internet everywhere. Hashtag internet everywhere. I'm starting a movement. Are you on Tinder? You need internet for Tinder, by the way. I'm not on Tinder, but I have friends that are. And I would never judge Tinder because I met my husband on an online dating service. It was not Tinder. It was pre-Tinder. But I do think sometimes that stuff works, despite the reputation that Tinder has for one-night hookups. I don't know. People are swiping. People are hooking up. I don't know. This is a really good story about Tinder. The company is sending a pair of procrastinating college students who have never met before, yes, they're Tinder friends, on a dream date in Hawaii. They started messaging each other on Tinder 3 years ago. 3 years ago. Kent State University students Josh Absek and Michelle Andrea started messaging each other in September of 2014. And it's been sporadic ever since. They never met. They never got together to do that date. Just never happened. Absek is 22. The girl, Michelle's 21. He said she seemed different from other girls that he had been matched before. And he simply sent her a message that said, "Hey, Michelle." I think that's kind of how it works on Tinder. Like, "How you doing?" Yep. Something like that. So, "Hey, Michelle." 2 months later, she replied, "Hey, sorry, my phone died." I guess it died for 2 months, but it kicked off a running gag that has continued for 3 years. So back and forth, the pair messaged each other with just really a lot of excuses about why it had taken so long to write. For example, "Sorry, Michelle, I've made a horrible first impression. I got really caught up with finals." 7 months later, she responded, "Hi, I really do apologize for now just getting back to you. Had a busy week." So I guess it became like a little running joke. It's hard to tell tone in Tinder, but I guess they just kind of got each other. They just really got it. By the way, they often deleted and re-downloaded the Tinder app because maybe they were dating other people. So they said they would often miss messages. She says, "I wasn't really expecting that he would play along. I thought I'd message him and that would be the end of it." So they just went back and forth on this for 3 years. So at some point, Tinder got wind of this. "It's time you got together in real life," Tinder messaged both of them. "Okay, you have 24 hours to decide the city you want to have your first date, and we will send you there." That's so cool. After some back and forth between the two of them that didn't take 7 months, they decided on Maui. So Tinder wrote back, "We're sending you to Maui, but you can't take 2 years to pack your bags." Now they took it to Twitter and they were on that. Michelle says, "My mouth is sore from smiling so much. I've been smiling for 3 days straight." He said that and she replied, "Honestly, just a huge thank you to the internet. Thanks for making my dreams come true. I've been a big fan of Tinder and Twitter." So the date's going to happen. The Tinder date's going to happen. I hope, by the way, that Tinder got two rooms in Maui, making no assumptions that this is, of course, their very first date and nothing should be happening other than first dating. That's what we want to happen on the first date. So Tinder, don't ruin that stellar reputation that you have already. But I love that story. Tinder is paying for their first date after 3 years back and forth on the app. Amelia is going to join me coming up at 4:10. We're going to talk about that giant iceberg. It's the size of Delaware. Yeah, that's right. It's broken away from Antarctica. I guess it's seceding. It's starting its own government. It's starting its own state. But what does that mean for all of us? Amelia is going to cover it. They're covering it over at Channel 4. So she is going to chat with us about it as well. I got the News Click results and I have a great new one for you. It involves mental health days. Plus a list of the Emmy nominations are out. In the 5:30 hour, this is our positively viral segment of the day. It starts at 5:20, but I'm going to continue it till 5:30 because I think it's important to have this discussion. A woman called into her office and said she needed a mental health day. She needed 2 days, and she would be back on Monday, hopefully feeling restored. The CEO of the company responded to her in such a positive way, thanking her for being honest and telling her that he really hopes she feels better and restored, and how she was right to open the conversation about mental health days, which are different than sick days, and they really are. Well, of course, this whole exchange goes viral. And it starts the conversation, yes, about whether or not to be honest. That's what we're going to ask in the News Click. And then about how we look at mental health days versus sick days. They are really different. If you've taken both, you know for sure they are really different. And then how companies may be changing their tune about mental health days. That whole conversation starting at 5:20. The news is next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.